Colorful Living Tip of the Day, number 283. Wonder if temperature in heaven is individualized or if some old ladies complain it's always too cold and bundle up in sweaters. I'm Chris Rodell, and this is Use All the Crayons podcast. And today I'm coming to you from our basement high up on Solomon Temple Road, an address that connotes both wisdom and worship. In the past 18 years we've lived here, almost 18 years to the day, there's been little evidence of either wisdom or worship. That's one reason I've long argued that we ought to change the name of the street to Copperhead Road. Plus, it's four letters and one spacebar click shorter than Solomon Temple Road. And that's the kind of thing that really adds up over 18 years. I wonder how much farther along my career would be if I lived on Pine, Elm, or Main Streets, or any boulevard you could type with three or four taps. But I'd be fine with Copperhead Road. It's the title of the 1988 song by Steve Earle. Probably the best use of bagpipe in rock song ever. That's mighty fine, mighty fine. Colorful Living Tip of the Day, number 26. If I were alive during the zombie apocalypse, I'd call myself the dust. Everyone knows zombies never bite the dust. I'm sitting by the fire because experience has taught me that sitting in the fire has third-degree consequences that negate the healthful benefits of the instant warmth. So I went in for the first of two surgeries in 1 month, and neither of them have anything to do with Parkinson's. Last week was the third surgery on the same left foot as the other two. The mission of this one is to undo all that the first two did in the first place. This all stems back to a toe, the big one that was going out of line and leaving me with a painful and embarrassing limp. So the podiatrist filled my foot up with hardware. He said it was his favorite operation, and he made little motions with his hands like he was miming inserting pins and plates in my foot. I think he was having so much fun he got carried away and put too many in. I suspect this in part because the operation left me with a painful and embarrassing limp. So I limped back and forth between all 439 Westmoreland County podiatrists and finally found one who said he'd remove the pins that were most likely causing the painful and embarrassing limp. Well, he didn't remove enough, and tomorrow, last week, he went back in to turn the clock back and removed all the hardware that the first doc put in on the botch. And don't you hate it when a guy who was supposed to be all about the foot turns out to be all thumbs? Day 6 of my recoup, and it seems to be good. My wife is seeing to my every reasonable need. And so far, she's not blown the whistle on what I deem as reasonable or not. I think I'm safe as long as I remember that whistles are the only things around here that might get blown. I've watched a lot of TV, Breaking Bad and Mad Men, two of the finest shows ever produced. And I've seen a lot of commercials for games like Candy Crush and questionable lifestyle choices like surrendering your bank account to the folks in Las Vegas. Wish me more luck on February 26 when I'm back in another hospital to have them fix my aching back, which for every step results in a painful and embarrassing, well, you know. This is serious stuff, this spinal surgery, but it's a step I felt I had to take. Why? Because all the other steps have hurt like hell. I'd like your advice, though, just to mess with the doc. I'm planning on declining anesthesia on the grounds that it's too expensive, and I could achieve the same unconscious result by listening to someone boring describe lawn care. This because I dusted off an old review of this podcast, Use All the Crayons' namesake, and the book reviewer relates how the book is so funny she chose to listen to it rather than accept anesthesia for a root canal. Here, check it out.
Is Deborah Edwards, and I am the founder of Grateful Home, and what we do is teach mindfulness and meditation with a focus in the workplace. And the book that I have to share with you today is called, and I don't know if this is coming up the way it should be, it's not on mine, but it's called Use All the Crayons. And this is by Chris Rodell. And the subtitle is The Colorful Guide to Simple Human Happiness. And it is. I was looking for a light book that, you know, because you're reading all these heavy books on mindfulness and, you know, and the scientific connection with it. These are just, he's going through one by one by one by one some funny stuff. and just, you know, all mindfulness and really focusing on, you know, really pointing out that a lot of us live our lives in black and white, or, you know, we always use gray, or we always use red. And he's saying, use all the colors. And what he's doing in this book is he'll go, number 24, eat ice cream in the morning, you know, just different things like that for mindfulness. And it's just so neat. And, you know, and I found myself going, I'm going to do that. And what the goal is to improve the fabric of your life by introducing different experiences. And what he tends to do in this book is to just give some examples, you know, sit down with the 5-year-old and ask what their view of the world is. And remember when you were 5 years old, what did you want to be? And I want to share with you just a great example. I was at the dentist. I'm laying in the chair. I'm listening to this book. I have my headphones on. He's drilling in my mouth and I'm laughing. And it kind of like set him off a little bit. And I'm like, he's kept going, are you okay? I'm like, yeah. But anyway, then after that, you know, I got out of the earphones. We got done. He goes, Deborah, I got to tell you, I am not accustomed to people laughing when they're in my chair. So it's a very, very enjoyable book. If you're down, if you want to add some more happiness in your life, check out Use All the Crayons by Chris Rodell.
Colorful Living Tip of the Day, number 876. If you see someone rushing through a subway or driving like a jerk, give the person the benefit of the doubt and stand aside. Who knows? Maybe you've just seen a doctor rushing to the hospital to deliver triplets. This was a story I wrote in about 2013. You may have heard about it. It was a doctor was fined, or a jury awarded a patient $500,000 after he heard derogatory banter. Here's what I wrote. I was disappointed in a Northern Virginia jury awarded a colonoscopy patient $500,000 after he heard derogatory banter he'd inadvertently recorded during the operation. The amount should have been much, much more. And he should have had to pay it. Studies have shown workplace morale improves when employees are free to blow off steam through irreverent comments about stressful work conditions. It's true with air traffic controllers, highway construction workers, and coal miners who go into deep, dark holes to excavate essential fossil fuels. Why should it be any different for the men and women who go into only deeper and darker holes than our fearless miners, the proctological people? What happened was this guy pressed record on his smartphone to preserve post-operational instructions. Then he put the phone back in his gown without having pushed stop. So when he got home and sat on his pillowed seat, he heard about 2 minutes of instruction and the entirety of what was said to and about him when he was under deep anesthesia. Rock historians will see a parallel between what happened to the plaintiff and how Keith Richards wrote Satisfaction. He'd come back to a Florida hotel room very, very drunk, but with a catchy riff in his head. He hit record on the tape deck and played the stark notes of what was destined to become our most indelible rock song. He then passed out cold. Next morning, I hit play, he said, and had about 12 seconds of satisfaction and about 49 minutes of me snoring. Can you imagine what that tape would go for at auction? Attorneys made what I guess you'd call a greatest hits version of the colonoscopy repartee. It's absolutely hilarious. The star is wisecracking anesthesiologist Tiffany Ingram. I can imagine the patient's distress when he was listening to the play-by-play and heard Ingram joke to the snoozing plaintiff, about 5 minutes of talking to you was in pre-op and I wanted to punch you out. Man you up a little bit. He was apparently a difficult patient. He'd boned up on the procedure, asked detailed questions about long shot mishaps, and shared his insights with the professionals. When a medical assistant notes an unsightly rash, she didn't say where, but we can all take a wild guess. Ingram warned her not to touch it lest she get some syphilis. She goes on, it's probably some tuberculosis in the penis. So you'll be all right. It's much funnier on the tape because the 3 or 4 of them in the room are having a wonderful time. They're joking, loosey-goosey, laughing, and perfectly at ease. It's like they're at a cocktail party, the kind I'd like to crash, if only the party centerpiece wasn't some guy's big hairy ass. I tried to put myself in the offended man's shoes. while understanding his shoes were probably in another room. Would the insults bother me? I really don't think so. First of all, I assume everywhere I go, I'm going to be judged on how I look and how I act. It's why I always I'm on my very best behavior when I go to get my tires changed, my haircut, or certainly when I'm someplace where someone might insert disinfected medical devices up my rectum. The attending doctor was spared disciplinary rebuff, but his evidentiary comments seemed to indicate that the guy was a real asshole. And this guy's a proctologist. If anyone's going to be able to make that expert determination, it's him. But I don't, under any circumstances, think we should be cracking down on extemporaneous banter in the occupational situations. That'd be, and you had to see this coming a mile away, a real bummer. Because people are bound to be people, and our people are bound to talk. The only thing we can do to possibly influence how they treat us is to be considerate about how we treat them. What they did was certainly an embarrassment, but it cracks me up. And I guess crack up is the only way you to go about it when you're talking about colonoscopies. Colorful Living Tip Number 857. Don't get fooled again. Too many people who mistakenly believe they have the world on a string realize too late what they're actually holding is a lit fuse. I wrote in 2016, my contention was that we could save healthcare billions of dollars if we could cure one prevalent disease. Hypochondria. Concrete evidence is emerging to support my theory that our national healthcare crisis will vanish the instant we cure hypochondria, the irrational conviction that one is destined to become ill. Hypochondria is not to be confused with typochondria, the irrational conviction that one is destined to become embarrassed by a malfunctioning spell checker. The Washington Post said so-called superutilizers place a huge and costly burden on the medical system. What exactly is a superutilizer? Superutilizers are people who overuse emergency departments and hospital inpatient services, making more visits in a month than some people make in their entire lives. My mother had an unhealthy thread of hypochondria running through her, health concerns, most of which I believe would disappear if she learned how to fast forward through the commercials. She sees, as we all do, the ubiquitous pharmaceutical commercials asking if we're feeling stressed, irritable, if our joints ache, and if we're having trouble sleeping. The commercials tell her these are symptoms of various garden variety afflictions. I tell her not to believe those commercials. Those aren't symptoms of illness. They're symptoms of life. The commercials have us all believing we should be living pain-free lives clear through our golden years. But even rich people get sick and die. And if it's going to happen to them, then what does the chance do the rest of us poor folks have? And the doctors have a vested interest in ensuring people keep thinking that they're sick. They conduct batteries of expensive tests designed to cover every complaining patient's eventuality when the only thing some of them are really interested in is covering their own soft butts. That's why I think one of the greatest physical attributes, one with which I'm blessed, is a really high pain tolerance. Some are born with it, others like me acquire it through years of overcoming things like chronic hangovers. If I stub a toe or feel an acute abdominal pain, my first reaction is to address the throbbing with something like, "Ha! You call that pain? That's nothing. You should have felt it the morning after my Greek buddy's wedding and all that guzzling of Mythos beer and flaming shots of ouzo." I understand it's a failing, but I extend this unsympathetic behavior to sick loved ones even. I remember one time my wife was belly aching over what she described as the worst pain she'd ever endured. "Pain?" I said. "You want pain? Try waking up Monday morning after a binge-drinking reunion weekend with me and the boys back at Ohio University." Big mistake. Her belly aching was the result of truly aching belly. She was in the delivery room about to give birth to our first child. Man, did she get pissed. Note to first-time expectant fathers. Never include in your prenatal pep talks, morale boosters about how your wife should quit whining and just tough it out. A woman in the throes of labor can do or say things that'll make you wince without even lifting a finger. I know many strong men who pride themselves on their pain tolerance, but only one who revels in it. He's Frank, a guy I met at the kids' afternoon bus stop. Normally, I try and avoid conversation with bus stop parents because it takes small talk and busts it clear down to the molecular levels. Not with Frank. He not only overcomes pain from things like toothaches, he performs self-dentistry. If you're ever with him at the bus stop, ask him to show you the tooth he removed, sanded, and glued back in place. Yes, glued. "The thing was just killing me," he said. Now, I wasn't about to miss a day of work to sit around in some sissy dentist office for something I can do right here in my own garage. He told me in glorious detail how he took some pliers and yanked that sucker right out. After the bleeding stopped, he examined the ivory and the vacant spot behind his lower lip. If I had this jagged edge, I knew if I could file that off and take some boat glue and put it right back in place. And that's just what he did. He was justifiably proud of his work. I think if we hadn't been there in front of all those kids, he'd have invited me to stick my finger in his mouth to test the tooth stability. Imagine how much we could reduce healthcare costs if everyone in the country reacted to pain like Frank. I'm pretty sure I couldn't even go that far, but I'm willing to do my part. Next time my mom complains about feeling sick, I'm taking her straight to Frank's garage. Colorful Living Tip number 892. People may think you're odd, but it's okay to confess that you enjoy Applebee's, the restaurant, yet are fearful of bees on apples. This is one from 2013 about Hank Heimlich. Did you know that Hank Heimlich was the inventor of the Heimlich maneuver? Of course you did. I wonder if the developer of the life-saving breakthrough ever used what we now know as the Heimlich maneuver as a pickup line in the popular discos of the era. Hey, baby, I'm Hank Heimlich. How about you coming back to my place and I'll give you a little taste of what I call the Heimlich maneuver. Have you ever been Heimliched? Ever Heimliched anyone else? When names become verbs, I feel compelled to investigate. Heimlich has become such a common name for such an uncommonly simple procedure, I had to find out more. Want to know what I learned? Henry Judah Heimlich is the uncle of Happy Days star Anson Williams. Who would have guessed an investigation in the history of Heimlich would lead to a motherload of potsy trivia? The Heimlich maneuver turns 40 next year. This was in 2013. About the same time Hank Heimlich turns 94. He lived another 3 years, died when he was 97. His maneuver seems as young as it is namesake is old. It seems like it's been around forever, but it's younger than Neil Patrick Harris. Doogie Howser. Without the Heimlich maneuver, we would have been deprived of the extended talents of Elizabeth Taylor, Cher, Ed Koch, Carrie Fisher, Dick Vitale, John Chancellor, and Ellen Barkin, all personalities whose lives were saved by timely Heimlichs. I know George W. Bush nearly choked on a pretzel in 2002, though Heimlich was necessary. But I don't remember hearing Ronald Reagan nearly choked on a peanut in 1980 as he was campaigning to become president. His life was likely saved when aide Michael Deaver Heimliched the Gipper. Reports say Reagan had taught Deaver the maneuver. My favorite almost Heimlich involved actor Pierce Brosnan and the ravishing Halle Berry. The two were filming a racy sex sequence for the 2002 Bond film Die Another Day. The scene was graphic enough that the scene had to be trimmed to avoid being the first R-rated Bond. Yowza. Anyway, Brosnan ad-libbed a funny line while Barry was eating a fig, and the fig lodged in Barry's throat. Brosnan said the nearly naked Barry almost choked to death as he pondered the propriety of grabbing her from behind and executing a series of aggressive midsection thrusts, a dainty consideration that betrays a serious misreading of the movie-going public's tastes. It would have been Bronson's most compelling performance since he was filmed trying to carry a tune in Mamma Mia. It's a pity, too, to sense the missed opportunity for tabloid headline writers who would have enjoyed a creative challenge to come up with a dandy about a peach of an actress named Barry nearly being felled by a fig. Speaking of tabloid writers, I was at a table with a bunch of them nearly 20 years ago when one of them almost choked to death on an unchewed meatball. Scrolling. It was at dinner where some editors for National Enquirer invited me and another correspondent to tag along. There was much laughter, drinking, and rapacious eating. I didn't even notice Mike was choking. My editor did. He lifted the sizable correspondent out of his chair, and the two mighty pumps sent the meatball flying across the table, nearly landing in another editor's gazpacho. What I remember most was the thrusting caused the visitor's bladder to loosen, and right there at this swanky restaurant in front of dozens of other shocked diners, he peed his pants. So in one dinner, he nearly died twice. Once from choking, once from mortal embarrassment. I asked the heroic editor if he'd have given the guy mouth-to-mouth had it been necessary. Not on your life, was his answer. He was adamant. I wholeheartedly concur. Another guy would have to owe me a ton of money before I, at the crucial moment, broke out the banaka and chose to bestow the breath of life. So the Heimlich is the perfect lifesaver. I'll bet my 13-year-old could do it, and given my sloppy eating habits, one day she might have to. More about the man. In 1951, he married Jane Murray, the daughter of wealthy ballroom dancing instructor conglomerate Arthur Murray. The pair had four children, one of whom, Phil Heimlich, a Christian conservative radio host in Cincinnati, has waged a nearly 50-year war against his own father. He says his own father was engaged in a wide-ranging history of fraud. Lousy ingrate. It's enough to break a thoracic surgeon's heart. Strange, isn't it, that the story of a man whose namesake technique will be saving untold millions from untimely asphyxiation would leave empathetic readers sort of all choked up. Colorful Living tip number 865. Certainly we can all agree that angels have wings, but do they have gills? If, God willing, I become an angel, I hope I can enjoy some gearless scuba time. That would be cool.
John Jamison, retired sheep farmer, Crabtree, Pennsylvania. My colorful living tip of the day is learn the fine art of knowing precisely when to quit.
Thank you.
Yes.